Welcome to the It's Complicated podcast. I'm Johanna Svensson, co-founder of the platform It's Complicated, psychologist working through the platform, and your host. Christmas just passed, and the best present I received were some watercolors. I haven't painted or drawn since I was 13 years old, meaning my skills, if I managed to develop any back then, have been hibernating for 20 years. But then, when my two-year-old took her nap today, I sat down and I drew and I painted for a while, and it was the most meditative experience I had had in a long time. I would even say that it felt like a testimony to the relationship between art and therapy, a relationship which has always fascinated me, and a relationship which is at the heart of this here episode, an interview I did with Berlin-based NYU-trained art therapist Migu. Enjoy your listen. So thank you so much, Migu, for wanting to talk with me today. Can you just briefly introduce yourself and your work, what you do, to the listeners?
Of course, I'm happy to be here, and thank you so much, Johanna. And my name is Migu Kitazawa, and I come from New York City, but I was born in Japan, Tokyo, and I lived there until I was 16 years old. And I immigrated into the US to live with my dad, who was already there. And then I became an art teacher, and then became an art therapist, and then became psychoanalytic psychotherapist later on. That's just a summary of what I do and where I came from.
Yeah. And so what about your practice today? Are you a full-time art therapist, or do you also save some time for just your own art and life?
Yes, I try to be sort of a half-time therapist here in Berlin. I have two kids, so that they keep me busy. And also, I'm kind of like, maybe because of the Berlin things, I'm becoming more creative, more expressive through art making process. Yeah. So I decided to make my own stories and manga through manga art and the comics about my American immigration, sort of immigrants experiences in manga. So like one by one, I'm working on it. But yeah, that was kind of new for me. Since I came here in Berlin, it just popped up in my head, oh, I should do that.
Wait, so how long have you been living in Berlin?
Since 2017, so about 4 years.
And how long have you been working on this manga series?
Oh, it's just a year and a half. I just started doing it last year, so it's kind of fresh.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm learning and doing everything.
And is this the first time you go in that direction, the manga direction?
You know, manga is really a cultural phenomenon in Japan. So it's really like everybody reads it, from a little kid to older adults. So it's in our blood kind of thing. So I used to draw mangas when I was maybe 10, 11, like everybody else. And then I stopped doing that because of the, you know, your busy life takes over. My dream was to become manga artist.
Okay.
So then when you grow up, you forget about the original dream to become someone.
That's so true.
I know, like a normal process. And then I was reading a book about, by Susan Cain. It's called Quiet.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, because I'm kind of introverted and I'm not really, you know, socially adept person, but that Quiet, the book, was telling me a lot of things. It just made sense. And then Susan Cain was talking about, oh, we all have personal niche and professional niche and some other niche that I forgot. But the professional niche for me is becoming art therapist. By personal niche, she said, well, you have to go back to your childhood. What did you want to be when you were a child? And I was like, manga artist. So, and then that book really inspired me because I had a time in Berlin to read so many books. And I was like, yes. And then I threw myself in.
And so you said that first you were an art teacher in New York, and then you became an art therapist. So how did that process happen? Do you remember like when and how you knew you wanted to become an art therapist?
Well, in New York City, I guess here too, you have to go into the actual school and you do the student teaching experience when you were in college. And I was assigned to a school, my old school in New York City. And kids were rough. Kids were like outspoken, expressive, no respect whatsoever to the teachers. So I was thrown into this environment as an art teacher, student art teacher. And I was so nervous. And the kids will talk me bad. The kids will like leave my classrooms. It was like a mess.
And how old were you?
Oh my God. I was quite older when I came here to America. So my grades were 2 years behind than anybody else. But still, I was like 18.
Wow, you were only 18 and thrown into such a volatile environment. Challenging, yeah.
Very challenging. And I'm not really outspoken person in general back then, of course. And my professor at the college when I was studying, she noticed how I was struggling. I was stressed out basically. So she told me, well, why don't you read this book about art therapy? And then I read it and I said, well, in this way, I'll be able to get to know each person individually instead of grading the same kind of similar artworks, A, B, C, and D's. And then you say goodbye to students, you don't get to know them at all. So I kind of like the art therapy approach to get to know people through art instead of teaching art. So that was my inspiration from my professor's suggestions.
And do you remember what this book was called?
It's one of the Edith Cramer's work, Art Therapy with Children.
Okay. And then from then on, because that's pretty early, it seems that you made that discovery or that switch.
The discovery was fast, but then I still had a feeling that I want to be teacher. I want to be an art teacher. So I stayed on at the college, City College of New York, until I graduate. And a person, Edith Cramer, was also an art educator. So I said, oh, I can do this. And then I applied for a graduate program, art therapy program at NYU. And that was fine.
Nice. And how was that program?
It was very Freudian.
Yeah.
It was very much psychoanalysis and talking about unconscious and content transference issues. I was learning new languages almost. Like I was like mind blown by these people. And so I had a also a difficult understanding the whole philosophy and concept of psychoanalysis. And then using art combination of those two and how does it work? But I really like the sort of like cold snaps, not flaky kind of things. Like when you think about drama therapy or art therapy, any creative art therapy, in my head, people dancing in a fire camp, something like really flaky in my head. And the people have that kind of misunderstanding. Oh, you guys are creative. You guys are, spiritual in a way, but I didn't want to be that kind of art therapist. I want to be like a really strict psychoanalytic based art therapy because that was really popular back then in 1998.
And how practical was it? What was the ratio between like theory and practical work?
I mean, master program was so intense. And then we had an internship like 3 days a week. I was working part-time to earn my money. So I wasn't really thinking about how practical it would be. Like you don't have a time, you just get going. But the physical internship program was really, really helpful for me. But at the same time, because again, that this shyness and the introvert was a challenge for me, because even with the art therapy. So yes, I was trained to see something in art, right? Yeah. Or I can sort of notice something, but I never learned how to say what to say during the art therapy session. So I was mostly completely silent during my art therapy session with my clients during the school year. So that's why I went to the psychoanalytic training to learn, okay, how do I express myself if I notice the counter transference issue right now between us? How do I approach to the clients what's happening right now in the therapy session? I didn't learn that in NYU at all.
Okay. And that training, was that straight after NYU or?
No, I think I got hired right away at the internship placement.
Yeah.
So again, I was like, you know, busy, busy working. And then I tried the Psychoanalytic Institute maybe 5 weeks, and I really loved it. It was an object relations institute in New York, and they are focusing on Kleinians and Winnicott and all the object relations psychoanalysts.
Yeah.
So I used that to relate to my clients, and that was really helpful.
Yeah. And is that typical in the world of art therapy in Berlin, to have art therapists who are psychoanalytical oriented and who are working with object relations, or are you kind of like a niche therapist?
I mean, it pulls to the direction of that way. But I changed. I was a psychoanalytic base, and now I'm a little bit more adjusted to what the clients here in Berlin need, which is like, I don't know whether I should say that, but coaching is very trendy here in Berlin.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked when I came here. I was like, wow, like I was researching my art therapy and all that. How do I get contact with other people? And I met a psychologist who'd be like, no, you need to be a life coach here. I was like, what? Strange. I mean, it was strange for me now. I mean, then, but now, like, I understand why they're coming from. So I changed into some kind of existential art therapist who is like, we are focusing on here and now.
Yeah.
And not about the past, not about your childhood, not about your childhood sexuality.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of able to combine that a little bit, and then, okay, let's get into work. And art therapy is a work, not the luxury or entertainment. So that's what I'm going for right now.
So the object relation theory is more just in the background, kind of informing.
Right now,
It
was, yeah. That
makes sense. And how would you describe the difference between doing client work in New York from doing client work in Berlin?
Berlin, I'm most likely focusing on individuals instead of groups. And I might run a group next year, but I'm not so sure, because I really love the one-to-one environment. Online environment is pretty good for me. So after the corona pandemic, I was actually looking for an office. After the lockdown, I said, you know, what am I going to do? And then online things just popped up and getting popular. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to try this. And it works so good for me and my personality wise. So I love it. But in New York, it was interesting because I mainly worked in the hospital settings and a psychiatric unit.
Okay.
So I met a lot of people, but I don't know for sure in here in Germany, but the length of stay there is very short in New York.
Yeah.
2 weeks at most, because of the insurance issues and other things. So the turnover of the clients are really quick. So I meet, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. 2-3 days later, oh, okay, you're getting discharged? Great. So it was like a laundry machine, which I like the pace. It was nice. Thank you. And then I had 10 to 15 groups a week.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a lot. And then people changes all the time. And I had this kind of support system in the hospital settings. And it, going to art therapy was a privilege for the patients.
Yeah.
Like I really had to take medications and be calm. And so I had these filters after a filter to be able for them to come to art therapy sessions. But when they are willing and want to come to art therapist and work with art therapist, and then I was like, you know what? I'll take a chance. I'll take him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you miss that support system actually? Because this makes me also think about now you're in Berlin, you're in private practice. It's also Corona and there's a lockdown. So it just enhances the challenges that private practitioners already have of like isolation. And how are you experiencing this?
I definitely felt that I don't have any contacts here in Berlin, and I was reaching out, but there are also other therapists and art therapists pretty busy. So the contacts didn't last quite long, right? We just said, oh, hello, we'll meet again. And then we didn't do anything, but it's fine. And also the networking, like I knew quite few psychiatrists in New York. I knew quite a lot of social workers that even though we don't know each other, I can just call them up and say, hey, I have a patient, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that you can prescribe medications for this person? You know what I mean? Just that kind of connections, even in private practice, you can do that. You can expand it. But here in Berlin, I'm still working on it. I'm still like playing around with it.
Yeah. So it's in the making, some kind of
work in progress, yes.
Network that can support your work.
Yeah.
And speaking of your current work, how would you actually describe a typical art therapy session with you, especially now that is it only online now, or is it
100% online?
Yeah.
So so some people prefer in-person therapy, of course.
Yeah.
And that means they said, oh, I'm sorry, I prefer in-person therapy. And I'll find somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's people's preferences. And structure-wise, I have 60-minute session, like, you know, and then for individual 60 minutes can be fine. And for group, I might have a 90-minute session.
Yeah.
So you start with, oh, hey, how are you doing? How was your week? Till that takes like 2-3 minutes. And then we go on a browsing phase. Browsing means that I'm shopping around what kind of things that they're going to be making today and what stories I'm be able to kind of easy translate to images. So that somebody will say, well, I'm feeling so shitty, like a storm going on my face and stomach and heart. And I say, well, wait. Let's draw that storm. So I'll be like shopping around. And if they don't know anything that they want, oh, I don't know what to do today. And then I'll give some kind of prompt.
Yeah.
So my favorite prompt will be, all right, so based on what you're telling me from the past, let's draw a bridge. So the simple is a bridge. And then they'll draw a bridge, da, 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 da. And then, okay, a bridge. What does it mean for your bridge? So most people say, oh, it's a transition between here and there. Exactly. So where are you? That kind of thing, that the stories will move around and expand, and then they can use imagination. And that takes about 20 minutes of time.
Yeah.
So it's quite some time to make art, but not enough. Because in a hospital setting, we had maybe 45 minutes of art making and 15 minutes discussion.
So is there a clear separation?
There isn't. So there is no clear cut. You know, I'm looking at the time, 60 minutes, but it could be 15 minutes talking and 10 minutes art making and then 40 minutes discussion. It could be like that too. And sometimes they don't make art.
Okay.
And we're just talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are most people who come to you already interested in art making? Do they have some kind of experience with creative expression?
Yeah, that's about half and a half. So half of the people who are already using art as a professional art, like graphic design, you know, and then the other people are like a mixture between they used to do art, but they stopped making or not motivated anymore, but they are familiar with the art materials.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is can be like, they're just curious how the art can be helpful to them dealing with the current present problems and issues that they're facing.
Right. So when therapy works, when art therapy works, when your art therapy works, what is it then that works in your opinion?
Right. I thought about that, and I'll say, so for instance, a new client came in and I'll see their work and ask them, okay, try to describe this artwork. And they'll say, okay, there's a tree, there's a house, and there's a person. That's all. The description is really flat and concrete. And then it became something happens later on, like that the story will come out. This house represents me, and the reasons are da 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 da. And then the weather that you don't see in the artwork, they are imagining what's the weather like, who will be there, what kind of creatures around the house, what kind of trees, how old they are, what kind of gender the tree has. You know, the story, naturally, their imagination expanding and their stories, and they are trying to connect with me. Oh, what do you think, Megu? You know, that kind of questions, they're not just only into their focus on their art, they know, they recognize my presence through the online screen. And that's really important. And also, naturally, people have this ability to self-reflect from the beginning.
Yeah.
They have been in therapy for a long time, and they know the trick in a way. Yeah. And then I'll look for a little bit more advanced signs, like they can ask me, like more relational gestures and comments in a way, like, well, I was thinking yesterday about my art that we did last week, and I went to my parents' house and I showed them my artwork that I did with you. You know, it's very, very like other people are sharing people's art, and then, you know what I mean? Just a little bit more relational. And of course, like when they want to terminate therapy, they want to like, okay, I'm ready to go, goodbye.
Yeah.
They will talk to me first. Well, I'm thinking about canceling or ending our therapeutic relationship. What do you think? You know, not just disappearing without letting me know.
Yeah.
Or I have to send the emails. Okay, what's going on? You're not showing up to therapy sessions. Where are you?
Yeah.
They'll be like, including my presence to their decision-making. You know what I mean?
Right, just, yeah. So it sounds like one of the key elements to what works in your therapy is both like unlocking imagination, but also like deepening already existing relationships,
right?
And
a more appropriate way to relate to other people.
Yeah,
like people want to cancel things, right? Like subscription or anything. That's easy to cancel the subscription because you don't have to deal with anybody.
Yeah.
But therapy is, we are in a therapeutic relationship. It's actual therapeutic relationship, and you need to include my presence and acknowledge my presence. Without it, it just doesn't matter whether your imagination is fabulous and you can make a story out of art. Anybody could be doing that anyway.
Yeah.
So
true.
The relational part is, that's a piece that I learned from the Object Relations Institute, that you always have to include therapist presence in order to improve or progress. And then that can be connected to the real world out there.
So if this is what works in therapy, what would you consider the main limitations? of therapy?
Yeah, I always say to my clients that well, kind of like 50% your work and 50% my work. So without their motivation and willingness to face their images and the artwork, or to give a chance to our therapeutic relationship, any therapy or any self-help activities might affect clients' progress and their growth. So my practice is only online, which means when they have technical questions or problems, I can't assist them physically, which I used to be able to. Like physical person will say, well, I'm using this clay and it's really wobbly. How am I going to be able to put the clay together and make them stronger? And I only could suggest to use the materials, and I have to trust what they have at home to hold it together, these two pieces of clay. Yeah. And I have no control over what they're going to be using.
Yeah.
Instead of like, I have this interesting materials to hold the clay pieces together and I can show you how. I can't do that anymore and online. So that's kind of sad in a way that I can't do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, giving them a chance to be self-reliable and independent of art making process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. I want to jump to something quite different because I just noticed that you also edited a book called Asian Art Therapists, with a subtitle Navigating Art, Diversity and Culture.
Yes, something like that.
So tell me more about this, how it came about and how the process of editing was.
Okay, the one of the editors from Routledge, Taylor and Francis Company, found me through the conference program book by the, we have the annual art therapy conference.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was presenting a support group for Asian art therapists. And that was my second or third year providing the group. And quite some people came and talking about, I mean, art therapy is a white female dominant profession. And we are the minorities.
Yeah.
So a lot of Asian art therapists came to my group and said, really have that burning questions and concerns in this organization and the way they work with the clients. And clients make a lot of racially provocative comments that they were struggling with that, especially when they're new to the profession. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to deal with it.
Mm.
So we talked about it, but we only had 45 minutes to talk about it. So let's keep going. We keep like once a year group for 45 minutes. And they were like, oh my God, this is not enough. Can we do something more about that? So I said, you know what? I'm going to ask for people to write about their experiences. And because the editor approached me to write about it, why don't we do it? So that's how it became originally. But the people in the group support group weren't really participating in the book, but I reached out to other people. So they were more interested in writing than speaking about it. So so I collected about 10 people.
Yeah.
And then it was difficult because that was my first time editing the book. And at the same time, I had to write a piece as well. So I used the lockdown time to finish the book because I had so many times. So that was kind of like practical time for me during the corona lockdown. But it was so difficult.
What was the most difficult part?
Well, I am kind of like control freak. Yeah. So if I lose the control, I get so irritated. Maintaining the theme as well as not to disrespect white people and then people of color. So that was kind of like, I had to be really compliant with that. But some authors are getting a little over the top. So I had to tell them, okay, you need to tone it down. You have to be respectful. And then they were all over the world. That was another thing. They were all over the world, mostly in the States, but yeah. I'm from Germany. The other person was from Taiwan, blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't able to, I had to push the deadlines actually to accommodate everybody's busy life with the corona. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was really the most challenging process of editing the book during the corona pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like next level moderation, just and so many things to take into consideration also.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And were there parts of the process that also that were so fulfilling that you could consider doing something like this again, or is this your
because every time I got this each chapter also submissions, and some of the stories are like so heartbreaking, like I was like almost in, I was crying, like how are we suffering like this as an art therapist and nobody know about this. And so that was really fulfilling and painful journey.
Yeah.
To yeah. see their and then know their experiences. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can also imagine that this kind of book can really be like a savior for people who thought they were completely alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though we only have 10 chapters, but I thought that people's reactions are really, really warm and kind.
Yeah. Beautiful. And are you currently working on any writing? I noticed that you do have an ongoing blog on your website. By the way, yes, I love your domain. Your art is wonderful. Your art is wonderful.com. That's yeah, brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I am working on, I try to do 2 blogs a month.
Yeah.
But it's because it's a holiday season. It's getting a little busy with yeah. events and all that. I think that I'll do the 2 blogs a month from January.
Yeah.
But it's been really interesting to write short articles on my yeah. blog.
Megu, thank you so much for speaking with me. This was really fun. This
oh, you're
super,
welcome.
Super enjoyable.
So thanks for having me here. Great.